Is Cassie Pensek there?
Yes, I'm here, and I pushed record, so we're recording. The only thing is it did not ask me for that four-digit number. It is recording, though.
Okay. Could you push star 5 to mute the audience?
Yes. Okay, I pushed star 5.
Okay. Well, now we're ready to begin. Hello, my name is Mike Graberitz, and I'm the chairman of the Institute for Literacy and Learning, and good afternoon to most of you. Before we begin, I have some very important
joining
messages.
Conference.
Stephanie? Yes?
If you've not done so already, please print the handouts being used today on this call from the Institute's website at www.theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org. And if you have a question for Dr. Motes during the conference, please email it to straighttalklivechat@theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org. And that email address, again, is straighttalklivechat@theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org. No spaces. As a reminder, there's a conference being held this summer where Dr. Motes is attending in Pennsylvania. It's called Straight Talk by the Experts. It's a week-long graduate-accredited conference being held from June 22nd to the 26th in Harrisburg, featuring Dr. Motes and friends teaching letters, the language essentials for teachers of reading and spelling. Also being taught that week is a Leaders Literacy RTI College and a Reading Coach Workshop taught by Dr. Mary Dahlgren. You don't want to miss this conference. You want to go to our website and check out the details or call us at 888-955-READ to register. But the benefit of this conference is that you'll be immersed with the experts for 5 days. This is not a conference made up of 1.5-hour sessions. This conference is a one of a kind, and on June 23rd of that week, participants at the conference will be invited to celebrate as we're honoring Dr. Torgerson with a Lifetime Achievement Award, so register today. I also want to remind you that next month we're featuring Anita Archer, Dr. Archer, and please check out our website. Now, I'd like to begin and introduce Dr. Motes, and if I really spent the time introducing Dr. Motes properly, I would be here for an hour reading off her accolades. But Dr. Motes is a director of professional development and research initiatives with Sopris West Educational Services. And Dr. Motes specializes in the implementation of school-wide interventions for improving literacy. She directed the NICHD Early Reading Interventions Project in Washington, D.C., and as a distinguished visiting scholar, worked on the California Reading Initiative. She's the author of many books and articles, including Speech to Print, Language Essentials for Teachers, Parenting, A Struggling Reader, and Letters, the Language Essentials for Teachers of Reading and Spelling, and literally hundreds of journal articles. So please let me introduce to you Dr. Motes. Hi, Louisa. How are you?
Hi, Mike. Thank you very much for the warm welcome. And I'd like to extend a warm welcome to all of you in the far corners of the world. When I looked at the registration list for this call, it was quite thrilling to have people sign up from Alaska and Hawaii and somebody from Shanghai and all over the United States. It's really great. What I'm going to talk about for the next half hour or so is the main points that I made in an article recently published in the journal Reading and Writing called Knowledge Foundations for Teaching Reading and Spelling. I want to give you a little bit of background about this and talk through the main points for those of you who may not have read it yet, or perhaps to prepare you to read it with my intent
joining
in
conference
mind.
Angela Joseph.
The
joining conference.
I guess we're going to hear everybody as they tune in. The journal Reading and Writing is accessible online as well as in print, and the entire issue of it was the January 2009 issue of this journal was devoted to research on teacher knowledge and the disciplinary knowledge base that's necessary for teaching reading, writing, and language effectively. The article that I wrote was the lead article or introductory article that really prefaced some very, very good work that is conducted mainly by colleagues and friends in the field at this point, since they regard me as the sort of senior person. I'm not quite at retirement age, but I'm almost there, and they're a lot younger than I, and have they both the funding and the energy to carry out field studies on teachers and the relationship between teacher knowledge, teacher practice, and student achievement. And so let me talk you through the main points that we make collectively, not only in the article that I wrote, but in the research that my colleagues are conducting. I'd also like to point out that the Journal of Learning Disabilities is doing a special issue on exactly the same subject matter that will be out in the fall. And again, I've written the lead article or the opening article for that journal issue. And I find it very interesting that in the year 2009, these major journals are finally devoting entire issues to studies that are focused on understanding teaching and teachers rather than on instructional programs. Everyone might find it somewhat amusing to know that the first paper I ever wrote about teacher knowledge and the necessity for our doing a better job with professional development was written in the year 1994, and it was called The Missing Foundation for Teacher Education, and it ended up being published in the Annals of Dyslexia. But before that happened, I had submitted it to the Journal of Learning Disabilities and received a very polite rejection from the editors because they viewed it as a rather unimportant issue, and they didn't think the article said anything that anybody would want to read about. So 15 years later, we have not only a special issue of Reading and Writing, but a special issue of the Journal of Learning Disabilities, and I think also of Remedial and Special Education, coming along with a fairly robust research base now to inform the way we approach professional development and to give us a much more solid basis for arguing that teaching reading requires a disciplinary knowledge base just as teaching math and science and history require the knowledge of one's discipline. This is an argument that seems to be gaining some traction, and what it implies, if we actually do gain traction, is that there someday would be much more rigor and depth in the training that teachers get at the pre-service level, and much more coherence and continuity in the professional development programs and courses that teachers take after they get licensed. That's what we're aiming for, and it's taking a very long time to accomplish this objective, but certainly I think this snowball is gathering some size here as it rolls along. In the paper that I wrote, the beginning sections are about this growing interest in research on teacher knowledge and teacher practice and the content of professional development. And I review events that have taken place in the field over the last 15 years especially, including all of the changes in education policy that led to the the guidelines in the Reading First program and many of the state policies that we're living with now that do align with the guidelines in Reading First. And even though the current funding mechanism for literacy programs has not been passed by Congress, but will be coming along, called the Universal Literacy Act, we hope to see some of the same language reemerging in the Universal Literacy Act, although it won't be called the Reading First program anymore. We're hoping for a lot of continuity in language that describes the components of effective reading, the importance of research-based and evidence-based practices, and the importance of professional development. And we hope also that there'll be a certain amount of money still devoted for, aimed at the accomplishment of these objectives about teacher quality. I'm hoping also, although I don't really expect to see it, but I'm hoping also for more specificity in what is meant by professional development to enhance teacher quality. That may still be a long time coming, because in my view, teacher quality is just a slogan until we are able to specify in fair detail what someone ought to know who teaches, who's responsible for teaching reading and language-based academic skills to kids. Along with these policy
joining conference
changes are, of course, the accumulating body of evidence on the components of instruction that work, accumulating evidence that good instruction
joining
really does
conference
make a big difference, especially for kids who are dependent on how we teach them, and that would be second language learners, children of poverty, children with dyslexia.
All participants have been muted, but you can unmute your line by pressing *6.
Children who are in the lower 40% on our screening tests and who will be at risk, or who are most dependent on how we teach them. In addition, of course, we have still a very strong interest in accountability, but not just accountability for students. There are more voices joining the chorus saying that we need to be accountable for the training and support we provide for teachers, and we need to be more accountable for aligning our assessments of teachers, such as the tests people have to take to be licensed. We need to align those tests with a research-based delineation of what teachers need to know. For example, the book by Catherine Snow and colleagues called The Knowledge Foundations for Teaching Reading, the 2005 book. If you haven't seen papers by Sandra Stotsky, she is the person who's mainly been responsible for the change in the teacher licensing tests in Massachusetts, and the success that state has had promoting better continuity between the licensing standards for teachers, the assessments that are used, and the professional development offerings that will support
joining conference
teachers in accomplishing
Connie
the
Sullivan
objectives. We also, of course, these days have with the advent of RTI, a much stronger emphasis on preventive intervention. And preventive intervention requires much more cross-disciplinary cooperation, and it requires much more whole school ownership of the academic success of all kids.
Joining conference.
no longer of the mindset that special education is going to take care of everything. And I think I see more and more states really taking to heart the necessity of supporting schools and implementing services under an RTI framework. And that means screening, it means preventive intervention, it means ownership of kids' problems by the general education system and the use of resources in order to do that, our professional development needs to be focused on the common denominators that allow people in different settings who have different professional roles to communicate with one another and to operate with a consistent understanding of what the kids need, what the assessments mean, how to assign resources, precious resources, to instructional programs and instructional groupings, and how to accomplish the intervention that we need without working at cross purposes. And that has always been a problem, because those of us who come out of different kinds of training programs often come to our work with a completely different set of ideas about the kids and what they need. So a definition of a disciplinary knowledge base is one of the things that needs to happen to make it possible for people with different certifications and different kinds of preparation to actually work collaboratively. And then another reason why I think there's an increased interest in really looking at the heart of instruction, which is what the teachers know and do, rather than the programs that have been adopted, is that the program emphasis that has been a kind of distraction, and actually still is in a lot of places, has obvious limits, and that is that we know umpteen examples of districts or schools that have adopted specific programs, but where they haven't gotten the results that they wanted because there's been insufficient professional development for the teachers, so that they understand the components that are most important, how to integrate those, how to use the programs to best advantage. So still we keep coming back to the heart of the issue, which is the training and knowledge of the teachers and the conditions under which they are practicing what they know. As I say in this paper on page 383, there just is no way around the necessity for giving teachers the tools for problem solving and decision making, because there's no way to replace the kind of analytical thinking that a teacher uses in a flexible response to the variety of kids that are going to be in any classroom. If there's one thing we've learned from intervention studies, it's that not all kids will respond to, or not all kids need the same kind of instruction, and the best teachers can differentiate, the best teachers understand how kids differ, and how the emphasis of instruction may need to change within those components that are necessary in any program. Some of the research we have on professional development also shows that if teachers are just given programs to implement or just given assessments to implement, that often they may comply with the directive, but but without the level of understanding that's really required to make the whole intervention process work or to interpret the assessments. So in this paper, I talk about the big ideas that have to underlie better practices. And my big ideas are not the same as the ones that the University of Oregon talks about, so I've kind of co-opted that term for my own use in this paper. But to me, the big ideas have to do with understandings from reading psychology and have to do with the theoretical frameworks that are most supported by cognitive research in reading psychology that explain how people learn to read, the difference between good readers and poor readers, and the role of experience, including instruction, in learning to read. And within those frameworks, one has to have a good research-based understanding of how kids differ. What's the difference between kids who are good readers and who are poor readers, but also within the poor reader group, what should we expect to see in that poor reader group? Is it the case that most of those kids have comprehension-based problems because they have, and that they have good decoding skills, which is one of the things I hear out in the field, or is it the case that decoding still plays a major role? Decoding and phonologically based skills still play a major role in reading problems for third graders or fourth graders and on up. So it's research that answers those questions. It's not a matter of philosophy. And in order to unify our service delivery and teach effectively, we have to start with a shared understanding of the most robust findings from psychological research in proficient reading and in poor reading. So in good professional development, and we try to do this in letters, especially in the revision of the materials, because we realized how important this point is, we need to select some really strong research-based models of what's going on as people learn to read, and we need to reinforce those and thread them through everything we do as orienting frameworks. And then when we focus on any specific aspect of what we're doing, we always have the big picture in mind. We always have these big ideas in mind. Ideas like the four-part processing system for word recognition, ideas like the Scarborough rope model, ideas like the Fletcher subtypes, the number of kids we would expect to find with any specific kind of problem. For example, how many kids are there who have fluency problems that are not phonologically based, and it turns out there are very few of those, although they do exist. Without those understandings, one is always dealing with problems at a surface level and is likely to make mistakes in interpretation of what the data are saying. Now, beyond those frameworks or big ideas that really need to form a kind of schema for everything else we do, there are an awful lot of details that really good teachers have learned along the way. And to me, professional development is really only worthwhile if it goes into sufficient depth to enable practitioners to really grasp what in the heck these big ideas are about at the level of lessons we teach, components of lessons we teach, how to give corrective feedback, how to interpret kids' errors, how to weave the components of a lesson together, and all those nitty-gritty things. Now, this brings me back to the research that we're that the field is gathering in study after study. And in this paper, I have a section in there just arguing about the details, which details are necessary. But the more important point for this call is that quite a few researchers, in addition to my own studies, which of course can be criticized as limited or biased because they're done by me, right? But quite a few other people who have done objective assessments of practicing teachers have uncovered the same concerns about what happens if the professional development opportunities are too limited or if teachers are just given programs instead of the time and the learning experiences that are required to really develop an understanding of what these concepts are all about. And what happens is we find that many of the concepts about language structure that are so important for instruction are very hard for people to grasp. And if you dig into the details at all and start asking people things like, how many speech sounds are in this word? What are the letters that are used to represent those sounds? What are the meaningful parts of a word? What is the grammatical role that this word plays in this sentence? And what are the multiple meanings and uses of a word that is on a child's vocabulary list? What is the organization of this paragraph? And so on. All these details about the language that we're teaching are, in fact, not easy, and they require, for people to understand them, a good deal of time and practice is involved for teachers as well as for students. Some of the researchers who've contributed to the literature are people like Anne Cunningham and Louise Spear-Swirling and Deb McCutcheon at the University of Washington, the Sharon Vaughn's group in Texas, Nancy Mather's group, and there are a number of people now who have given the kind of surveys that I'm fond of using and that are in the back of this paper. With typical response rates, a number of people find the same thing. So what should we conclude from this? One of the unavoidable conclusions is that, first of all, many teachers, again, are being given programs and assessments to use before they have a very solid understanding of the content that's being measured, that's being taught, so they're always operating with a sense of insecurity and or imprecision in the instruction. So what comes across to the kids is fuzzy, and that's the scientific word I like to use for it, fuzziness. So concepts are not completely clearly, consistently explicated or reviewed, and the examples don't really fit, and those sorts of things go on. And it's not just the fault of the teachers. When I look at the instructional materials that are often used, I see the same problem in a lot of these materials because they're often written by people who are given an assignment in a publishing house and who themselves haven't really had the background. So there's no way around the need to spend some time helping teachers. And I've become more and more of a believer that the teacher who has real depth of insight and knowledge and understanding of the kinds of things that we teach in letters is a really precious commodity, because that person can get results sometimes in spite of the materials they're working with, sometimes using materials that have to be adapted, and the nuts and bolts of the instruction will be in that person's response to student responses, that instructional dialogue that can never be totally scripted in the teacher manual. And that goes for everything from teaching about phonology to teaching where to make an inference in reading text that has that requires the student to make many inferences. So this is what I'm saying is true all the way along, even though it's easiest to document the issue when it comes to word level linguistic structure.
Joining conference.
I'm watching my time here. In this paper also, one of the sections does a summary of some of the research that's out there. And when we get to the existing literature, the research literature that tries to draw statistical lines between measurable aspects of what teachers know, observable aspects of what teachers do when they're teaching, and student results. Now I'm describing a kind of triangle here, if you can imagine a triangle of three possible data points: teacher knowledge, teacher practice and behavior, and student outcomes. The studies that exist are a bit mixed, and what we collectively find when we try to examine these relationships is that effects are hard to measure on a large scale, and the large scale studies don't show a whole lot, or when there are effects like the ones we got in Washington, those effects are very small in the larger scheme of things. But when you can do a smaller scale study and really control the instruction the teachers are given, really monitor the kind of mentoring and feedback and follow-up that they get after that instruction, and really look at what they're doing in the classroom, the smaller scale studies are the ones that show most clearly how these relationships work between teacher knowledge, teacher practice, and student outcomes. But I also comment in this paper that one of the disconcerting findings in some of the work that I've done, and in Susan Brady's study, for example, is that we have, again, not a straight line among all of these things. So we see some teachers in our studies who will do pretty well on a knowledge test. They actually have the knowledge, but they're not implementing the practices. And that may be because of maybe motivational issues. It may be because they haven't had enough or the right kind of mentoring, or it may be a matter of incentives. In a lot of these studies, we have observed that the teachers who are good implementers and who take to heart all of what we've been saying for years about what hard work it is to teach the kids who are hard to teach, how much effort it takes, how much practice, how much time on task, how much work they have to do and the students have to do in order to close these gaps that we're concerned about. When we find all of these wonderful people who do this, they're not necessarily rewarded for their expertise or their superior effort, and the people who are making less of an effort aren't necessarily experiencing any consequences for that either. So some of this, and so that brings me to the bigger picture, which is that this whole variable of teacher knowledge that this paper is about has to be considered in the larger context of all of the things that are necessary to have good professional development make any difference. And when it comes to letters and letters training, you know, I saw a lot of people on the list who've been participants in letters training or who are doing letters training or supported letters training. And one of the hard realizations of our experience for the past 5 years or so is that while this is really good stuff, it may not make a difference unless we have consistent leadership and unless we have a context in which consistent messages are given over quite a long period of time about the practices that are being encouraged and rewarded, the implementation that needs to go on day in and day out, the proper use of assessments, the proper use of programs, and all of that stuff has to go together. That professional development alone cannot be the one pivotal thing that makes the difference. And so often it's the consistent effort over a long period of time that has to be realized through leadership, through coaching, through mentoring, through follow-up collaborative work, through team meetings. And this a whole framework of understanding and common goals and common understandings that people have within a school or district. Because what sabotages it all is conflicting philosophies that are still, you know, at war with each other, leaders who are still unresolved as far as which direction to go, and you just will only spin your wheels if those basic understandings are not resolved. And one of the and this is one of the things that that Mike's group does with the schools they work with that I really endorse and think is very important, and that is that translating the knowledge base into action is a complex and long-term endeavor. As far as the professional development goes, if I could say a couple things about letters specifically, and Mike's group uses letters in a way that that I totally support, which is imparting the knowledge base through that sort of structured learning experience, but then carrying through and following up with a lot of modeled lessons and a lot of observation and a lot of role play and a lot of team meetings and so on, and a lot of leadership training. Our mantra these days is that the best results are obtained when you try to do more with less over a longer period of time. That is, to focus on specific topics, learn them more slowly, stretch out the learning experience, practice what's being learned, try to implement it soon after the learning experience takes place, and digest this knowledge base in smaller pieces. So if we're working with a district on letters implementation, for example, our advice is to identify some goals with the faculty or for the faculty, start with these big ideas, but then tackle these topics having to do with the components and the layers of language and so on, tackle them more slowly with the real intent that people are going to learn and implement, with the expectation that if people who are in the professional development are learning about vocabulary, for example, that they're expected to use that knowledge in the implementation of instruction, and that it's not just something that they sat there and got seed hour credits to do and said it was all lots of fun and then nothing really happened. We think one of the reasons that the transfer can be problematic is that we've all tried to do too much too fast, and that with this research base we see just how much time it takes to really learn this stuff and to become really well versed in the content. So we want to apply what we're learning from our experience to the way we approach professional development. I just would wind up by saying that I hope some of this is making sense, and that those of you who want to really think this through in more depth, there are a number of good studies now in this issue of Reading Writing, and then the Journal of Learning Disabilities upcoming. The Snow, Griffin, and Burns book is a good resource, although it has a lot of technical language in it. And also that old rocket science paper that I wrote 10 years ago is pretty much what we're still saying now, but we're just saying let's get serious about doing this and recognize that in the last 10 years we've learned how important it is context for teachers, that the leadership and the coaching and the continuity for teachers to really get a good handle on this disciplinary knowledge base that we continue to define. So that's my spiel for today.
Thank you, Louisa.
All righty.
Again, very enlightening. I want to remind everyone that this conference call and all others have been recorded and are in the library section of our website. And the reason I stress this is because there's good information that Louisa speaks about today and in the past, as well as other colleagues of her, that is available for your professional development, and it is free. So please take a good look at the library section and recommend other faculty members that you work with to go out there and listen to some of these conference calls. They're very, very valuable. I think you all agree. And I want to remind all of you that you'll be able to see Louisa and friends with Letters Training, as well as Dr. Mary Dahlgren teaching the Reading Coach, and Mary Dodoniker teaching literacy leadership with RTI the week of June 22nd to the 26th. And at that week-long graduate-accredited conference, you will hear from people like Reed Lyon, Patricia Mathis, Marilyn Adams, Louisa, Joe Torgerson, and others. So certainly you want to eye that up on our website and take a strong look at that. If you have any questions for Louisa, even after today's session, please email them to us at straighttalklivechat@theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org, no spaces, and we would be happy to correspond back with everyone, any question, and all the answers that have been asked. So again, please join me in thanking Louisa by unmuting your phones and giving a round of applause. Louisa, thank you so much for your time. You always drive us to another level, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike, and thank you, everybody who was on the call. I know you're the warriors out there fighting these battles. And send your questions to Mike's group, and they'll screen them for redundancy or whatever, and pass them along to me, and I'll do my best to respond within a reasonable amount of time. Thank you.
Thank you, and I will see you in Harrisburg in June.
Okay, will do. Take care.
Talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye. Thank you.
joining conference.
Mary Linda Braden.